You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. And welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel. Tonight's show is being underwritten by the Missouri AFL-CIO's Missouri Works Initiative and Plaster and Cement Masons Local 518. The Missouri Works Initiative is formed to eliminate barriers to economic opportunities by connecting Missourians to the necessary resources to build life-sustaining careers. Missouri Works Initiative is the nonprofit side of the Missouri AFL-CIO. And we at the Cement Masons Local 518 stand for all workers' rights and encourage everyone to buy union-made products and use union signatory contractors. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, the Kansas City Building Trades, the Union of Construction Unions, has a new leader. His name is Ralph Oropeza. We'll ask Ralph whether he's expecting a building boom in Kansas City. Then, do you know who put the roof on the Kauffman Center for Performing Arts? It was SMART, among others. That's the Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Local 2. In our ongoing Union Leader Series, we'll talk to SMART's Greg Chastain. In the news, the alarming rise in child labor in the United States and Starbucks workers and their new CEO. Our feature at the end of the show is Washington Window on Workers. We'll discuss the UAW elections and apparent victory of Sean Fain. And now for the news.
And now news from our side, March 23rd, 2022. There is a growing concern over the increase in child labor in the United States. The U.S. Department of Labor reports that the number of minors employed illegally last year increased by 37% and was almost triple the number in 2015. The Labor Department is currently investigating 600 cases, which they say is the tip of the iceberg. They found violations, suppliers and contractors for big corporations. One in the Midwest is Packers Sanitation Services, Incorporated. PSSI, which illegally employed over 100 children between the ages of 13 and 17 in hazardous occupations at 13 meatpacking facilities owned by JBS, Cargill, Tyson, and others. These children worked illegally on overnight shifts cleaning razor-sharp saws and other high-risk equipment on slaughterhouse kill floors. Most are immigrants. Many are unaccompanied minors who have been trafficked. New York Times reported that many have foregone going to school while some struggle to stay awake in school after working all night. The increase in child labor of immigrant children is connected to our broken immigration laws. Delays of years in processing asylum claims and a labor shortage of adults partly because of the same broken immigration laws. Reuters investigators found that dozens of kids as young as 12, most of them Central American migrants, are working in southeastern factories supplying the Alabama Hyundai auto plant. The Economic Policy Institute issued a report this month called Child Labor Laws Are Under Attack in States Across the Country. The report that there is a coordinated campaign led by industry groups, restaurants associations, state chambers of commerce, and the Americans for Prosperity, the organization founded by libertarian Charles Koch, to weaken state laws restricting child labor. Bills include deregulating the number of hours children under 16 can work, allowing work in hazardous jobs, doing away with the need for parental approval to get a work permit, allowing kids to serve alcohol, etc. Arkansas just passed a law, which was signed by Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, that eliminates age verification and parent-guardian permission requirements. In Missouri this year, House Bill 960 would extend work hours, but it looks like it's not getting any action in this session.
It looks like the new labor rights protections in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement known as the USMCA, which revised NAFTA, are working. Last year, the workers at VU Manufacturing in Piedras Negras, an American auto plant, parts plant with headquarters in Michigan, successfully filed a complaint under the USMCA labor rights chapter. They accused the company of violating their right to vote for an independent union to represent them in place of the corporatist pro-management union that claimed to represent them. The Mexican government agreed, and VU management agreed to abide by the law. But they didn't. So the workers filed another complaint late last year. The U.S. Secretary of Labor and U.S. Trade Representative both spoke out, urging the Mexican government to hasten its investigation. The alleged violations range from the company failing to bargain in good faith to members of the LSOM union that the workers elected being threatened and intimidated. This is the first time a company has had a second case filed against them. Under the USMCA, covered facilities that have received a prior denial of rights determination are subject to suspension of preferential tariff treatment, penalties on the goods or services provided by the facility, and even the denial of entry of goods in significant cases into the United States. So VU Manufacturing is risking its right to import auto parts duty-free into the U.S. On March 16th, Mexico's government said it concluded that there were serious irregularities hindering free association and collective bargaining at VU Manufacturing's operations. Mexican officials said they would launch a 10-day consultation period with U.S. counterparts to develop a remediation plan. It added that it would seek to ensure workers can fully exercise their collective rights without disrupting bilateral trade, whatever that means.
This from The Guardian. Starbucks workers at over 100 stores around the United States walked out on Wednesday ahead of the company's annual shareholder meeting and held a protest in Seattle outside Starbucks headquarters. The actions were launched in response to Starbucks' aggressive anti-union efforts against worker organizing, which have included mass firings in retaliation for union organizing, intimidation, store closures, withholding benefits, schedule cuts, and failure to bargain in good faith. Violations have been so egregious that Bernie Sanders, chair of the Senate Labor Committee, threatened to subpoena Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz. Instead, Schultz agreed to appear voluntarily and will do so next week. Sarah Papin, a Seattle Starbucks worker, said, "Starbucks baristas, like me, are the ones who keep our stores running. We remember our customers' regular orders, make the lattes, clean up the spills, and are often the bright spot of our customers' days. We are the heart and soul of Starbucks. Instead of celebrating the law-breaking former CEO hell-bent on silencing us, Starbucks should respect our right to organize and meet us at the bargaining table. We are Starbucks, and we deserve better." At the shareholders' meeting, Starbucks workers asked shareholders to vote to approve a resolution for a third-party assessment of the company's commitment to workers' rights, arguing Starbucks is violating its own commitments in its global human rights statement on collective bargaining rights and non-interference. At the meeting, the new CEO, Laxman Narasimhan, was unveiled. He is replacing founder Howard Schultz, who had come back from retirement to lead the union busting. Narasimhan said, "We have limitless potential. Rather than address head-on companies' seemingly limitless union busting, he promised to work in stores for half a day each month and expects his leadership team will stay closely connected to the frontline experience as well. Starbucks announced over $1 billion in investments in the overall partner experience. That's shown up with the introduction of new benefits and with increases in pay, presumably all while avoiding good faith negotiations with the employees at its several hundred unionized stores.
Lace up boots and faded jeans, a homemade sandwich, a half a jug of tea. The average Joe, the average pay, the same old end, the same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer, kind of glue that sticks this world together. Hands of steel and cradle of the promised land. God bless the working man.
And that song you just heard was A Hard Hat and a Hammer by Alan Jackson. I'm Tom Gebkin. I'm president of CWA Local 6360, and I will be hosting this segment. The Greater Kansas City Building and Trades Council works to improve the conditions for those organizations that employ, build, and train commercial and residential projects on all scales. Quite a few trade unions make up this council. These unions build roads, bridges, racetracks, power plants, utilities, manufacturing facilities, airports, shopping centers, commercial buildings, hotels, and many other construction projects. Elise Martini was the business manager of the Kansas City Building Trades, but she advanced to a top national leadership position in her union, the Operative Plasters and Cement Masons. The Heartland Labor Forum congratulates her and wishes her the best in her new role. But tonight, we welcome Ralph Oropeza on the show. He was recently elected by his peers to be the business manager of the Kansas City Building and Trades. Ralph, we want to welcome you to the Heartland Labor Forum.
Thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
For those in our audience, they may not be fully up to speed on the building and trades. Would you tell our audience what that is?
Yeah, so the Building and Trades Council is a group of all the trades pretty much under an umbrella of the AFL-CIO, and get together with the business managers along with the delegates and always strive to move forward. So that's really the objective of the building trades, is to collectively, all of us of different union types, iron workers, electricians, plaster masons, bricklayers, you name it, sheet metal workers, all of us, pipe fitters, that we get together and make decisions to stay unified and collectively move down the road forward and always advancing the building trades in this city.
Would you say it's kind of a one for all and all for one organization?
Yes, I mean, that is the intent, is for to always promote the building and trades together. That's really what I'm about. That's really what I want to do, is to always continue to promote the building and trades.
Well, now that you're in the new job and you have a background with IBEW, but tell our audience how you decided your journey to get to this position.
Yeah, so my journey started long ago when I was a young man. Back in 1991, I was going to be a police officer, but I injured myself prior to the physical. And so in the meantime, I had applied for the electrical trade with the apprenticeship. And luckily enough, they accepted me. And I remember presenting that letter to my mother, which in turn, she just absolutely cried, because she knew that my life was about to change. And it did change. So I'm now in my 32nd year as an IBEW member. And it's been an incredible ride.
As an IBEW employee or member, what did you do when you were out in the field every day?
variety of things. I've worked for industrial, commercial, big jobs, some like the Royal Stadium, Arrowhead Stadium, Union Station, those types of jobs, even from little, just on a service truck, troubleshooting problems, things of that nature. And before I got into the trade, I absolutely did not think that's what we did. I thought that an electrician drove around in a truck and had a badge with his name on it, and that's what he did. He showed up with his tool belt. Didn't know we were supposed to get into the ground and lay conduit down in the dirt and all that good stuff.
Actually get your fingers dirty.
Yes.
Now, you're in your new role. Do you take a leave of absence, or do you continue on as an IBEW member?
That's a great question. I will always be an IBEW member. I will continue paying my dues and going to the union meetings and still being a participant in my IBEW. I love the IBEW. That started my career. But now I'm in a different role. So I'm now in a leadership role with the building trades. So when I'm in that capacity, I have to take that cap off and really represent every single trade that's in there.
Right, right. And, the building and trades and all of those unions that are represented by building and trades, they've been busy on all kinds of projects in the metro. The airport, it's now done. There are several big projects going on and potentially a baseball stadium coming up. And if a baseball stadium comes up, there's real possibility there could be a football stadium behind that. So would you talk about that?
So the possibility of one happening is real, and the possibility of it happening with the other one is also real because they're both tied together. So they're both tenants of Jackson County, and so that's all tied together. I don't know if the lease is up in 31 or something of that nature, but if you're going to do something for the Royals, you're going to do something for the Chiefs. I'm all for the new stadium. I want to see progress, but there's a lot of building blocks that need to be put together before something like that happens. And, the powers that be are really trying to get there. There are some forces that are against it. And, we're trying, as the building trades, we're trying to get through all of that. And hopefully we can work through some of those weeds. So, to answer your question, if one happens, the other one is going to follow, in my opinion.
And from your perspective, you're talking lots and lots of jobs.
Tremendous amount of jobs, not only in the stadiums, but around the stadiums. The development that happens to make those stadiums function so that we become a major city, which is what we've been striving to do, the airport, bringing in FIFA World Cup, those things are important. So you have to have the amenities to go with it. If you visit a lot of big cities with downtown stadiums, you see the amenities. Their downtowns are alive. And so that does bring a lot of different jobs, not only the construction jobs, but the service industry jobs too.
A lot of jobs, a lot of careers, a lot of good things for a lot of different people.
Absolutely.
As head of building and trades, you're probably just settling in, but you have to wear a lot of hats. You got to be at a lot of places, attend a lot of meetings, probably way more hours than a 40-hour work week, nights and Saturdays. When something comes up, you have to deal with it. So discuss what your new role is about.
Well, I'm still trying to figure it out. It's been a crazy 3 weeks. First, I want to give a shout-out to Elise Martini, who absolutely – now that I'm in that role, and I've worked with Elise many times on certain contracts with Jackson County, things that we had a few contracts together. Seeing her day to day is incredible. So for me now, I'm just trying to program what fits for me and to make it work. When I talk to the business managers, and they have they support me 100%. They've reiterated to me that they're going to definitely help me with all of it, for me to be able to function inside that new role. I come from a very pampered situation when I was an agent for the IBEW, and I had a very tremendous support role there with me. The staff was tremendous. Now I am the staff, and so I have to try to tie it all together. So yes, the Google Calendar is my best friend, and pretty much that tells me exactly where I need to go. So for right now, I'm just trying to hold on, put everything and put a plan together, and then I'm going to try to implement that plan.
Yeah, watching Elise do her job, she did it so easily that now you're looking behind the curtain and it really isn't as easy as she made it look.
That is correct.
We're talking with Ralph Oropeza. He is the new business manager of the Kansas City Building and Trades, a big job and an important job. Where do you see building and trades going in the future now that you're at the helm? What are your goals for this group?
That's a great question. So right now for me, and I said this on a couple interviews that I've had before, I want to keep moving the building trades forward. Right now it's paramount that we do that with the amount of work coming to this region. It's important that we can fulfill those necessities. The demand for labor is going to be at an all-time high just to fill those positions that are going to be needed for these tremendous projects. So for one, recruitment of new candidates to get into these positions. I want to reach out to the communities and reiterate to them that if college, university, which is a great thing, I'm not taking anything away from those institutions, but if it isn't for that young student, then let's direct them into a trade. Whether it doesn't matter what trade, but if it's a union trade, let's make it available for them so that they have that option. It changed my life. I did the college thing for a couple years, and I lived in a house as big as this small desk, you know. And my mom, you know, she was trying to do her best feeding us. You know, she didn't even know how to speak English, so I was a poor college student. And then I was also a dad at a young age, and so it was very difficult for me to study. It didn't work for me. But when I found the trades, I was able to make a living, and I was able to give my family good benefits, and then also to get my skill set. And that's what I want for a lot of kids that are like me, is that give them another avenue, another road to succeed. You don't have to go to a university to make a good living. We have some very, very interesting trades, and there is a position for everyone.
And for those out there with young people trying to figure out what to do, the building and trades still has a retirement.
Absolutely.
And how old were you when you got into the IBEW?
I was 23.
Okay, at 23, the last thing you're thinking about is retirement. But now that you're the age that you are now, retirement is getting closer.
Yes, it is.
And the things you did at 23 are going to pay off when you decide to retire.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we talk about. When I was with the IBEW, I also did recruitment. I did membership development, and those are some of the things that we talked about. You know, right now at 25, right now at 30, you're not thinking about, you know, later on when you're 65 or 64, when your body's starting to break down a little bit. And those are real facts. What are you going to have there? And a lot of the locals have defined pensions, something that is going to be there for you when you retire,
which is now a rarity in the private sector, except in building and trades.
That's correct.
When you have a monthly meeting or a quarterly meeting, and do all of the building and trades business managers come in and you guys sit down and talk about stuff, or what? How do you connect with your building and trades organizations?
Yeah, so we have a monthly business managers meeting, and we discuss a variety of topics from politics to just everyday operations, expenditures, things of that nature. And then we also have a delegate meeting when the delegates come in with the business managers, which is a bigger audience, and we go over a lot of that stuff, and we, you know, promoting politics or promoting agendas and things of that nature. And of course, every delegate there has a voice, and every business manager has a voice, and believe me, they speak their mind, and that's the way it should be. I mean, that's what being a union member is all about. Is you're a member of a body, and that body is, like I like to say when I used to coach sports, is I used to ask the question of, at 32,000 feet in the air, what is the most important part of the airplane? And every kid would say something, every parent would say something, and they're absolutely correct. Every single part, mm-hmm. from the last rivet to the engines, to the landing gear, to the wings, every single part of that plane at that altitude is crucial. So I used to ask, when little Johnny comes home or little Petey comes home and says, "Hey, I'm going to be the left guard or I'm going to be the center," and they say, "Oh, you should be the running back." Well, you've crashed our plane because now the wing thinks it's better than the than the pilot. And so that's kind of what I think union really is every single part of us are equal and we're as important and every idea is important. And what we need to do is if we're unified as one, as that one plane, then we're going to fly, and we're going to fly a long ways. But if we're not working together, we're going to be crashing and crashing quick.
I would think that meeting, you as the president or business manager, you would find that those meetings are helpful to you because you get to hear what's going on that you may not hear if you didn't have those meetings.
Absolutely, it's imperative that we have those. I mean, I need direction. I'm in a position of servitude, so I'm there to serve. I'm no better than any of those delegates, and so with them, with their leadership, and also with their maybe their foresight, we can get through all of it.
Would you tell us about Billion Trades have been trying to recruit women and minorities for quite a few years? Have had some successes, but probably not where you feel it should be. What can you do to reach these potential workers?
Well, for one, is I want to be in the front leading that. And I want to tell the story of my mom, who is an immigrant, who worked her tail off. I want to tell her story and what it made me do and how it directed me. I am bilingual. I am of Mexican descent. I speak Spanish. I speak English. And I want to reach out to those people, women and men alike, and tell them the story of opportunity and just remind them, look where I'm at, and this is what got me here. And if you want to be a part of that, I welcome you. I have an open door, and we will get you in the right position. But you have to make that move. You have to at least look at us.
Yeah, many of our Labor Leader Series participants have said if you have to be willing to work and show up for work, and you will have a job. And I visited with you at one of the meetings that I saw you at, mm-hmm. and one of the things that the commentator brought up was a saying that you had said in one of the newspapers that came out of, I think, the mm-hmm. Kansas City Labor Beacon, and that touched me, and would you talk about that?
Yeah, so for me, it was about what I strive for is human rights, because as a union, that is what we're fighting for, is human rights, basic human rights. And the other one is to lift up our wages and standards. Without those two, we don't have human rights. We don't have the rights to even get buy a car. And so that, for me, starts to work on everything that we're supposed to be working on. And so as a labor leader, that is what's most important to me, is those human rights. And for people to have that dignity and also, too, that know that I'm there for them, that I'm going to speak for them. If they're afraid to speak, I'm not afraid, because they're not going to fire me, right? They're not going to reach out and take my job. So I want them to reassure them that I will represent them. And every labor leader is willing to represent them, because that's really what being a labor leader is about, is to being out there and to taking it, you know, because if we're true labor leaders, we are all about human rights.
And we're all about helping those who don't have a union that want to be in a union. It's kind of our job to help grow the labor movement.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what membership development's all about, recruitment. That's making them make that hard choice, change. Change is the one thing that keeps us from moving forward.
Well, Ralph, you are the new business manager of the Kansas City Building and Trades. And I want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you being here, and I look forward to watching you work in the future.
Thank you, Tom. I greatly appreciate being here.
We're getting the bands back together. The KKFI Band Auction is back, and on March 25th and 26th, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., KKFI will auction off performances of some of Kansas City's finest local bands and artists, including the Brody Buster Band, the Royal Chief, K Cat King, Calvin Arsenia, and Bob Walkenhorst with Jeff Porter and Norm Dollar. You can bid online ahead of time beginning March 20th. Go to kkfi.org or follow us on social media for more information.
Thanks for listening to KKFI. Be sure to like and follow your community radio station on social media at KKFI 901 FM. We're now adding new content to our social media sites every day, and you'll want to stay in touch with what's going on here. And thanks for supporting the station since 1988.
And the song you just heard was Working Man's PhD by Aaron Tippin. When we think of the sheet metal union, many of us think about shiny stainless steel buildings and products. It may be a slide at a parcel delivery company, the vast roof of the Kauffman Center, the scoreboard at Royal Stadium, ductworked in the ceiling, and other structures that we can and can't see. But the craftsmen from the sheet metal, air, rail, and transportation workers known as SMART are really all over the place. They are sheet metal workers, service technicians, bus operators, engineers, conductors, sign workers, welders, production employees, and more. Tonight on our Labor Leader series, we welcome Greg Chastain. He's the business manager of SMART Local 2. He began his career in 1983 while still in college. He started out as an apprentice and worked his way to business manager, a position he's held since 2014. During this time, he earned a degree in labor education, and Greg wears many hats. He serves as a trustee on the Sheet Metal Workers National Pension Fund, financial secretary treasurer of the Kansas City Building Trades, and financial secretary treasurer of the Sheet Metals Workers Great Plains Council. He also served on the Smithville Board of Education from 2008 through 2020.
Welcome to the show, Greg. Good to have you with us tonight. Tom, in his introduction, mentioned that SMART Local 2 represents a variety of workers. And can you? And I know at one time you were sheet metal workers, now you're SMART, you've taken on different groups of workers. Talk about Local 2 in general and then the workers that you all represent.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. I do appreciate the opportunity. Sheet Metal Workers Local 2 represents primarily building construction trades sheet metal workers. We have about 1,100 members in Missouri and Kansas that we represent, that's active employees. We also represent production workers at two facilities. One of them is in St. Joseph, Missouri, at the Silgan Canning Plant, and the other one is in Albany, Missouri, at a Johns Controls manufacturing plant. As far as the building trades, our members, they're in all different aspects of construction with sheet metal. They're architectural sheet metal, they're HVAC, industrial. We do a lot of work at Ford, at car plants with the paint booths and the exhaust systems and ovens for the paint system for the vehicles. We have contractor that does primarily kitchen stainless steel work, manufacturing sinks and refrigerators and things like that. We have members that work in service, HVAC service. They work in TAB, which is testing, adjusting, and balancing to make sure that HVAC systems are working at their optimum and most efficient for the building occupant.
So, Greg, SMART stands for Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, right?
That's correct.
So, in terms of the air, rail, and transportation, do you represent those individuals in your jurisdiction too?
No, actually, our international is smart. And what we have is we have the sheet metal workers, the smart, what we call sheet metal division. And there's also what we call the transportation division. That is a lot of railroad workers, some bus operators, bus drivers. And there's also some that are in the airline industry. I think there's some a pilot bargaining unit that's up in the northern part of the country that they represent as well. So that's where the air comes in.
Okay, but in terms of what you do here in the Kansas City area, you deal mostly with sheet metal workers.
Our local union is construction re and manufacturing related and sheet metal only, yes.
Okay, and I think you cover a geographic area. So could you talk about the geographic area that Local 2 covers?
Sure. We cover 39 counties in Missouri, primarily the Northwest Missouri area. We go down the Kansas County line all the way to Vernon County. We go all the way to the north to Iowa border, and we travel east to the lake area in that area. Also, we represent 60 counties in Kansas,
Wow.
which is there. We represent and cover areas in southeast Kansas, and then from Topeka clear to the Colorado border, pretty much everything north of I-70.
Wow. So do you have to travel quite a bit in your job then to go to the different work sites?
Yeah, we have business representatives that does the day-to-day operations in those areas. Also organizers that take care of the organizing responsibilities in what we call Area 6, which is in Topeka and all the way to Colorado over there in Kansas. I do travel to for representational meetings and different contract votes, contract negotiations. I do travel for those, but we do have representatives that does the bulk of the representation in those areas on a day-to-day basis.
So, how many contracts do you have to negotiate?
Well, with even though it's that big of an area, we have a contract and building trades contract in Kansas City area. We have a
Okay.
building trades contract in the Topeka area and what we call Area 6, and which is the Kansas counties. And we have our two building trades, con or I'm sorry, our two production contracts for the two facilities that we represent.
Okay. And how many
So
members did you
it
say?
sounds like a lot, but a majority of our Missouri counties is all covered under one collective bargaining agreement with
Oh, well,
different areas within that contract.
that helps. And did you say you had 1,100 members or
We have
whatever?
1,100 building trades members, and about right now, I think we're up to almost 400, 350 to 400 production worker members, plus retirees. So it's about 2,000 members total, counting our retirees and everybody.
Okay.
Well, Greg, when I talked about in my introduction, you began this career in 1983. You were a young man. As you graduated high school and looked out on the horizon of stuff, what made you decide to get into sheet metal and then get active in your union and work your way all the way to business manager? Tell us about your journey.
It's not your typical journey, really. My dad is a sheet metal worker, or was a sheet metal worker. He retired in 1994 as a journeyman. My full intention when I left high school was to be an industrial arts teacher. And I went to Maple Woods for 2 years. I played baseball there, scholarship. I wanted to further my education. But while I was going to Maple Woods, I joined the apprenticeship. Work was really slow then, so I wasn't really working in the industry. I was just going to school at night in the apprentice school. And from there, I took a leave of absence from the apprenticeship and went and finished my education at Northwest Missouri State. Like I said, I was really intended on being an industrial arts teacher. And while I was in college, my thoughts kind of changed a little bit, and I majored in industrial technology and business. So when I finished college, I went right back into the apprenticeship, and I started my apprenticeship over again. And I guess I was always destined to be a sheet metal worker. My dad being a sheet metal worker when I was 5 years old, people would ask me, they ask all little kids, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" Well, I'd always say a sheet metal worker, so I guess that was my destiny, and that's where I've ended up.
I would wager you may have made more as a sheet metal worker than an industrial arts teacher, maybe.
You know, I guess it was kind of a good career decision because a lot of the industrial arts programs across the different school districts have kind of gone by the wayside. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, we need people to build things, and we need to have people that's interested in that and provide kids an opportunity for a career path that's going to make them successful. And that's what I thought. You know, that's all I took in high school was industrial arts classes. I got all my required classes out of the way, and from then on, my electives was in industrial arts related.
I think all the time I was a teacher, we always had industrial arts. I'm sorry to hear that it's not in the schools as much anymore.
The good thing is, Judy, that it is making a comeback. A lot of schools are saying, you know what, we do need to have building trades in there. We do need to have that opportunity for kids that don't see themselves as college for a path that they want to go after high school. The trades and industrial arts programs and vocational education is really starting to make a comeback.
I agree with you. I think kids need to be presented with lots of opportunities because there's not one singular path for people to be successful. So as business manager, you obviously have to be educated in a number of different fields. You're basically the head guy there at the Sheet Metal Workers Local 2. So how do you keep up with all the different fields? Like what do you need to know about in your job and how do you keep up with it?
Well, it's a challenge. You know, it's not only keeping up with our industry as far as sheet metal and construction is concerned. We also have to be very involved in politics. You know, I always tell our members that people are trying to legislate us right out of business. So we have to be up to date on politics. We have to build those relationships. We also have to, you know, have a pretty much a legal background and understanding all the labor law that is involved with negotiating contracts, with grievances, with arbitrations, with unfair labor practices, and being able to recognize those when our members' employers aren't doing the right thing per the contract.
Yeah, and keeping up with the changes and all of that stuff you just described.
And also, I know, Greg, when we were battling right to work in the state of Missouri back in, I think it was 2018, but I know labor came out strong in that campaign, and I thought it was remarkable because we beat back right to work by 67%, which is, I think, the best any initiative petition has done, or one of the best in quite a while.
Yeah, I was real proud of the state of Missouri for repealing right to work. Everybody across the state saw that it would be bad for our economy, bad for our workers, and bad for our state in general. You know, it was a lot of hard work. You know, our members, they were engaged, and they were talking to people that they knew that wasn't in the industry on how important it was to repeal right to work. I think it's one of the true shining stars of the Missouri labor movement in the last half decade.
We are talking to Greg Chastain. He is the business manager of the Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers Local 2 here in Kansas City. You cover a lot of areas. You oversee a lot of things. You cover a vast geographical area. I would think that having a good executive board is very important. Would you discuss the executive board and those around you and how important it is to have good people in those positions?
Absolutely. Our executive board is ones that kind of helps us keep engaged with the membership at the rank and file level. They're the ones that come to the meetings. We engage with them. They help us run the local. They make decisions based on, you know, the expenditures of the local. But they also, more importantly, I think, is they go back and they talk to the membership about things that's going on at the local level and tell them how important it is to be engaged and to make sure that they're following the contract and are able to ensure that the quality of life that our union has been able to provide for our members for the last 134 years continues.
How many do you have on your exec board and how long are your terms?
Terms in Local 2 are 3 years. We have election every 3 years. And we have 6 executive board members. There's 5 Kansas City area members and 1 from the Topeka area.
Greg, you talked about being part of the apprenticeship program when you were young and how you got into it. So could you describe that program to us?
Our apprenticeship program, I think we have an excellent training program for our apprentices to be able to teach them the trade they've selected to go into. What we want to do is we want to make sure that our members have all the tools in their bucket to be able to go out and be successful on the job site. Our apprenticeship is a 5-year program, but basically there's an application process, a test that is given at the Metropolitan Community Colleges. They administer our test, pass 3 of the 4 areas of the test. Then you're given an interview with the JETC, and based off of that, the scores that's compiled from those 2 things, then you're put on an eligibility list from highest score on down.
When you complete your apprenticeship program, are you able to build ductwork one day and then put flashing on the roof the next day and cover all of the things that a sheet metal worker does?
Yes, our apprenticeship covers all aspects of our industry. We teach HVAC, we teach layout shop, field fabricate, or field installation. We teach architectural metals. We have, all our fingerprints, our members' fingerprints are all over the city on the buildings that you see every day, the Performing Arts Center, Spartel Hall, Royal Stadium, just to name a few, the Temple in Independence, the steeple on that was fabricated and installed by sheet metal workers. We want to make sure, like I said earlier, we want to make sure that our members have all the tools in their bucket be able to perform anything that our contractors give them to do out on the job site on a daily basis.
Switch gears. You also have a leadership position in a group called the Greater Kansas City Right to Truth Committee, and you are chair of that group, and you've held that for quite a while now, I think. So that group has had a lot of influence, I think, in Missouri in terms of labor and media relations. So could you talk about that Right to Truth Committee?
Yes, the Right to Truth Committee is a collaboration of labor and media. And what it's designed to do is to allow labor and the media segments to be able to build relationships. And that way, if the media has questions about something going on with labor or with unions or with workers, they'll have contacts to be able to go to and ask those questions. And not only that, it allows the unions the ability to know the media people to be able to get our story out, and that way somebody else isn't telling the story for labor. We're telling the story for labor. And this organization has been around for, I think around 30 plus years, maybe 40 years.
I think it was the 70s.
Yeah, well, actually it was started in the first Right to Work, I believe, back in 1978. So it's been around a long time, and I'm just fortunate enough to be able to carry on that tradition. And that's kind of the way I look at it. I think it's important to keep those relationships and be able to talk with the media and have those relationships there when you need them to be able to get our story told.
If we don't tell our story, someone else will tell the story, and it won't be the story we want to tell.
That's correct.
I just want to give a shout out to Herb Johnson, who's no longer with us, who passed away about a little over a year ago. But he actually was very influential in starting the Labor Media Breakfast. And he got me involved in it years ago when I was a union president. So shout out to our old friend Herb.
We miss Herb.
So I think it's about time to go. So I'm Judy Morgan, and with my co-host, Tom Gepkin, we want to thank you, Greg Chastain, business manager for SMART, Local 2, the sheet metal workers who do lots of work in Kansas City. You've given us a lot of information to let us know what your workers do, and we really appreciate it. Thank you for being with us this evening.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Greg.
And that means it's time for Washington Window on Workers. And I'm Judy Ansel. With me on the line is Mark Grunberg in D.C. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm fine. Thank you.
You wrote a really interesting article about the UAW elections that are just concluding. First off, you make the bold statement that Sean Fain is the winner of the presidency of the UAW. Is that for sure?
Almost for sure. If I had to change the headline on my story before my final edition. He leads by 505 votes. There are 600 still left to be counted. These are challenge ballots. But a bunch of the challenge ballots have already been counted, and I went through the tally sheets. And they only reduced Sean Fain's margin by between 105 and 134 votes.
Uh-huh.
So depending on which tally you use, there are two separate tallies of challenge ballots. What I'm seeing there is Fain's the winner.
Yeah.
That's okay. What I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are saying that. So why is his victory over Ray Curry such a historic event?
The same self-perpetuating group has been running the United Auto Workers for 77 years. These are the folks who finally got the auto workers in trouble, and I hate to say it, but the ones who really got the auto workers in trouble were people from Kansas City.
Yeah.
the last president, who was from Kansas City, before Curry, that is, went to jail. Mm-hmm. The guy before him went to jail, mm-hmm. and 12 other people went to jail. It was a massive kickback scheme with Chrysler.
Yeah.
So these are the insurgents. These are the folks. These are the same folks, and they got help from them, by the way, who basically swept the Hoffa people out of the Teamsters just over a year ago.
So,
and even if Curry wins his appeal, and Curry is thinking about taking this all the way through the courts, which could drag it on for who knows how long. Most of the board that was elected are the insurgents already.
Uh-huh.
So either way, there's going to be a big change at the UAW.
Right. Scott Holdison, who is from the UAW for Democracy, which is a rank-and-file caucus within the UAW, he said, a Fain victory is the difference between solidarity unionism, rank-and-file unionism, and the company unionism that we've been experiencing in the UAW for several decades now. How do we know that Fain really represents solidarity unionism?
Well, Scott was on the board of UAWD that basically, you know, listened to everybody who wanted to challenge Curry and then made the decision. And they questioned him very closely. This is something I found out. I just couldn't put it in the story. It was getting too long. They questioned him very closely, and he convinced them of his, I guess, bona fides. He had been battling the, even in his own local, he had been battling the entrenched crew for years. As an organizer, as a shop steward.
Where is his
and
local?
Even in negotiations.
Uh-huh. Where is his local?
His local is Kokomo, Indiana, okay. Chrysler. Old Chrysler local.
Okay. And so what's he promising?
He's promising, well, first he's promising a clean union. No more bribes and kickbacks. Second, now that the election's over and UAWD helped push this through, all the future elections in UAW are going to be one member, one vote, not a convention type election. And third, he's going to try to open up communications with the membership as much as he can. Just as an example, the UAW's bargaining convention starts on Monday. This is a special convention they have before they go bargaining with the Detroit 3. It's going to last for 3 days. It's usually a bunch of delegates who meet in Detroit, right?
Mm.
He's invited all 400,000 members of UAW to Zoom in and be part of the convention.
I hope they have a big Zoom account.
So, I hope so too.
One of his big promises is that he's going to get rid of two-tier. That's going to be a tough order for the UAW against the big three, I'm sure. He also is promising that he's not going to conduct the negotiations in the traditional way that they do it. Any ideas on how that's going to happen?
Well, he's been pretty close-mouthed about the details, but one clue came out before the convention. Caterpillar settled a contract, 6-year contract. Usually when CAT and the UAW faces off against CAT, you wind up with a forced strike that can last months.
Yeah.
I have a friend within one of the UAW things in Detroit, and when I told him that, he said, "You're kidding. They didn't strike?" And that contract, 6 years, eliminates the two-tier, but it's over the 6 years. So even then, there was grumbling within that local, within those CAT locals.
Uh-huh.
But that's a clue in so many
words.
One
last question. It's got to be quick. So what happens if they haven't named a president by the time they start this bargaining convention on Monday? Isn't that bad news for their preparedness for the negotiations?
Yes, it is, because Curry's going to be in the chair, but he might not be in the chair by the time they start talking.
Jeez, how weird. Okay, well, obviously this is a cliffhanger. Thanks very much, Mark, and we'll talk to you next month.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay, and now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. Not much of a calendar, to tell you the truth. The UU Forum on Sunday is called The Stupidity of War and the Exaggeration of the Threat, with John Muller, Sunday, March 26, 9:30 a.m. at the Unitarian Church, 4501 Walnut, Conover Hall, or get a link if you go to allsoulskc.org, and you can do it online. Rally for SEIU Healthcare in Tough Bargaining. This is going to be Friday, March 31st. We do not have a time yet, but we will try to post it on the Heartland Labor Forum Facebook page as soon as we get a time. It's going to be at Menorah Medical Center. The Cross Border Network will host a fundraiser for its Bienvenido Fund for Immigrants with a film showing of the film Icebox, April 8th and April 12th, 7 p.m. That's two showings at the Stray Cat Theater, 1662 Broadway, KCMO. For tickets, you can go to crossbordernetwork.org/events. And that's it for our calendar. The rest is way in April, and I'm going to leave that go. There are several positions for organizers open. Starbucks Union Workers United is looking for a Kansas City organizer. To apply, email resumes to GEasterby@CMRJB. You can find this on our Facebook page, .org. And Missouri Jobs with Justice is hiring a Kansas City organizer, someone dedicated to workers' rights with a willingness to build relationships across race, class, and life experiences. To get more information about this, go to mojwj.org. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week to the Heartland Labor Forum. Our show is Derailed in Ohio. What about Kansas City? What's coming through the yards here? The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to our engineer, Stephen Hill. Stay tuned for the Thursday night special. It's rhythm and soul, and you know that kind of Korean soul. Please fill out the listener survey at kkfi.org and tell us your favorite shows.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss. And you can talk back to us, too. Send us your feedback, your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to Heartland Labor Forum, kkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming ones, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on this show are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening at 6 or to our rebroadcast Friday mornings at 5 right here, 90.1 FM, KKFI.
We still got our pride, 'cause we are the working class, and that's the place to be.